This is the rest of, or some of the rest of an interview we did with Bernard Hickey, covering more of the topics that he covered in his small brief.
That was really good until kind of blah, blah, blah.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
Episode 4, Special Edition. Extended interview with Bernard Hickey. With Ben and Morgan. And Bernard. Hello, Ben, and welcome to the first special edition of the Discourse Weekly Show.
Yes, a special extra podcast for you guys midweek. It is
Bernard Hickey.
Yes, Bernard Hickey and the rest of the interview that we did with him, with much more interesting stuff in it. And yeah, have a listen.
It's good stuff.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
One of my aims is to get people coming in and talking about these things and then provide them with useful charts and tools and information which they can use to start thinking about, you know, is it better to fix or to float? Or what's going to happen next with interest rates? Or are house prices really going to keep going up?
All these that's kind of novel when you get the alternative is people at the Herald saying, should we have folate and bread? Which no one, you know, without any information on it, you know, no one has the ability to understand that, and yet they ask for an opinion on it.
Yeah, and there's a huge opportunity online in particular to provide information, to make it accessible, and to go deep. So a good example of that is today we get the fourth statutory manager's report into South Canterbury Finance. Now, sorry, not South, but to ARN Securities and Hubbard Management Funds. Right. Why does the rest of the world care? This guy was a hero of the financial scene. Yeah. He may well have cost the New Zealand taxpayer $1.6 billion. The Serious Fraud Office is investigating fraud, believes that he may have committed fraudulent acts which would, if they'd been known about, made the government guarantee invalid, i.e. he committed fraud on the New Zealand government.
Yeah.
Detail in this report, which is 25 pages long, shows that it looks like he transferred some bad assets from the Presbyterian Support Services in South Canterbury to a trust that he was running investments for about 400 wealthy, formerly wealthy, former farmers.
Right, so it's propping it up like a Ponzi scheme, basically, to say...
Yes, I haven't used the P word yet, but, but I'm going to outline all of the details.
Yeah. So
what I'm trying to say here is that we can report on stuff and provide detail in there and have debates about things that you can't do in a newspaper or even on television. You know, on television, you've got 40 seconds to tell a story.
Yeah.
I can tell the story in a gazillion words
over
or
a few
five
weeks.
Words,
and
link it all together with a tag that Google will discover. So that when people, in 50 years' time, type Alan Hubbard, South Canterbury Finance, they'll go, Rob Petrusevich when he starts in business again in 20 years' time.
Right.
Who's that guy, Rob Petrusevich? I've never heard of him.
Okay.
Just imagine if 10 years ago, people were able to Google Rob Petrusevich and see what he got up to with Euro National in 1987.
I don't know.
No, that's the thing. A lot of people don't know.
He
ripped off a bunch of investors and blew up a company in a spectacular fashion, was widely reviled within the business community, but still somehow managed to convince more than 15,000 mums and dads to give him $400 million.
Right.
And our authorities didn't spot that or do anything about it.
Yeah.
And the political and economic elite in New Zealand just stood by and watched it happen.
Right.
It's a scandal of the highest order.
Yeah.
And neither political party, no one in the authorities have actually acknowledged that they failed or did too much wrong. It was just the system that got it wrong.
And
what if I do anything useful in the next few years,
it's
providing a lot of information and debate to get people thinking about and talking about these things. So you ask, why am I doing this? Why do I put my head above the parapet and say controversial things and think about it and talk about it and have people call me an idiot and all that stuff in public? It's because I'm aiming to produce a body of information and news and tools online which people can use to make, we hope, better financial decisions in the future.
Cool.
And part of doing that, part of our business model is to make a racket.
Right. Okay, fair enough. So coming back to the actual situation, and one of the other things you said is the great deleveraging has begun and nothing can stop it. So that's what you're saying, is basically the middle classes are waking up and saying, we can't afford this anymore. Mm-hmm. And along with other things, that's meaning that basically there's no one there to buy Chinese goods anymore. There's no one there to, you know, there's not enough money to sell them bonds or whatever. Yep. So it's obviously not just a New Zealand problem. It's not New Zealand that needs to become, as you're saying, more protectionist perhaps and more controlling. It's a worldwide problem. What's the natural conclusion of nothing if no one does anything?
Nothing if not.
What's the possible conclusion? Yeah, it's a worst case scenario.
There's a whole really worst case scenario. Well, there's a very active community of extremely well-informed people in the United States who are preparing for the breakdown of civil society and of the financial world. So they're storing baked beans and guns and that sort of stuff. And these, I'm not talking, you know,
militants or nutters. Yeah.
I can send you links galore from people with, you know, MBAs and people who deeply understand what's going on in the financial system there, who are scared witless and are preparing to be, you know, to have to live without an ATM machine or banks or, electric power or all these sorts of things. So that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah. And I guess they're buying a lot of gold.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, you see the gold price has
gone to $1,350 an ounce. I'm serious. There are people who are preparing for the end of the current global monetary system. And I'm not just saying this because there's a few people in fringe groups who are saying this. You know, the IMF is going to have a meeting in 2 weeks' time in which the G20 heads, Obama and all of those, are going to come together and try and work out how to change the global currency system to avoid Armageddon.
Right.
And, you know, do we move back to a gold standard? Do we change the reserve currency from the US dollar? How does China allow its currency to rise versus the US dollar? Do the Americans continue to print money to monetize the deficit? You know, we're talking really major change to this.
So that's pretty horrible. So then, why would being, so the other thing is they're talking about becoming maybe more nationalistic and other people. I mean, China's remain nationalistic and remain protectionist, and they're keeping their currency low because they want to keep their goods cheap and that sort of stuff. So two things: how do you compete against that? And if this is to stop the natural war, the conclusion of an action, what does that look like then? So if everyone becomes more protectionist, what does the result in that situation look like?
Well, there's two things you can do.
Yep.
You can lie on the ground and wait to be kicked. Open yourself up and say, here, kick me in the ribs.
Which is arguably what New Zealand's been doing for the last 20 years.
Exactly. Yep.
Opening up more and more and more, and then going, why have you guys not opened up?
Exactly. So there's lots of good things about that. It's much easier and friendlier and healthier to lie out in the sun with your arms spread out. That's great.
Right.
And it's nice. That's how people sunbathe and, you know, how you enjoy life rather than being huddled up in a corner, you know.
Yeah.
Scowling at the world.
Exactly right. Getting rickets because you haven't seen the sun. Anyway,
so one way. But
what we need to do, roll ourselves up into a little bit of a ball,
right?
So that when the blows come, it's not going to hurt so much, and so that we protect ourselves a bit.
Yeah,
because
more an armadillo than a hedgehog.
There you go.
So what
we're seeing right now is a global currency war.
Where
the US tries to print its way to freedom, i.e. inflate away its debts, because there's a couple of ways you can get rid of debts. You can restructure, or you can have some inflation.
Mm.
And that's what America's chosen to do.
Yeah.
And it's very clear.
Yeah.
The Chinese, because they won't let their currency rise versus the US dollar, are essentially choosing to do the same. So they're trying to, they don't want this to happen, but they're pumping cash into their economy. There are bubbles going off all over the place. And in China, you know, people are buying jade and apartments for $1.5 million that are smaller than this room and, you know, all sorts of crazy things. That's why they want to buy land in New Zealand, because it's physical and it's not priced in
US dollars.
Somewhere
to put your money, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people in New Zealanders don't understand how very serious the financial situation is elsewhere in the world, and how we're seen as the safe haven, a place to put your money where it's not going to be printed away to nothing.
Right.
And where there is a solid legal system and the government runs a good system and people aren't going to hijack you in the streets for money. You know, you'll be fine. Yeah. And the problem with that, of course, is when everyone wants to bring their money here, That just pushes up the New Zealand dollar and destroys our manufacturing sector. Right. And so the best example of this is in the last week we've had this huge debate around The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there are some real issues there around the unions and who's right and who's wrong.
Yes.
I don't know the details of it. I'm sure there's all sorts of stuff we don't know. But what I do know is that when they were planning this movie, the currency was at 50 cents US. It's now at 75.
Yeah.
It could be at a dollar within a couple of months. Because next Thursday, the Fed is going to print $1 trillion and may have to print $30 trillion, 200% of GDP, to actually get stuff done.
Because we're linked with Australia a little bit and that sort of stuff. And
So our currency has risen. What does that mean?
Yeah.
That means our manufacturing sector, the one that can't take advantage of higher commodity prices, the ones that are exporting anywhere but Australia are being murdered. Right. So when you think of Weta Workshops and the Hobbit Complex and the Raycons and all those companies, they are trading in US dollars and they're exporting to the States or China or Asia or other places that are connected to the US dollar. They are going to get murdered. They will be destroyed. Those high quality, high fund jobs will be out of it. The only things able to continue to export will be farmers because they've got high commodity prices on the other side, because inflation's taken off. And the first thing that takes off when inflation happens is commodity prices.
So milk will be more expensive worldwide, so they'll be protected.
Food, wheat, soybeans.
It will be more expensive for us.
Yes. So this,
it also means the farmers get more power, which is,
That's what we need.
So what do we do? We do what John Key did this week, which is fight tooth and nail to keep those jobs.
Right.
Break the rules.
Yeah.
Be impure. This isn't a level playing field.
Yeah.
Do whatever's possible to keep those jobs. And so in that case, that meant giving a little bit of an extra subsidy to Warner Brothers and deciding to change the rules within 5 seconds and all that stuff. But he's doing it. And I think that one of the major reasons for the Hobbit almost going was the currency went from 50 cents to 75 cents.
Yeah.
And John Key's doing the right thing, which is fighting tooth and nail in a street fight to keep our export sector going while the rest of the world tries to, is on the brink of destroying itself.
Right. Interesting. So where does that lead to? Do we start rebuilding car plants and putting taxes on Japanese imports?
So there's some things you can do. I'm not suggesting we go back to
Robin. Isn't software better? Isn't it better to export bits than to export?
I think you're exactly right. I mean, you look at the success in New Zealand of some of the companies that have chosen to use the cloud as a way to bridge the tyranny of distance.
Sorry, today I have to comment. Someone made a great point today where cloud is associated with things as a service, software as a service, sort of stuff. Someone said, "What the fuck?" What the as a fuck? Because it's just, there's so many different things as a service or things as something else.
Xero is a good example of this, but there are many other companies who are using the cloud and using that pipe to bridge that tyranny of distance in a great way. And one of those is Weta Digital. They use that technology and that ability to connect quickly to the rest of the world to do this.
Yeah.
And so my heroes, if you like, in this new world, are the ones who get around the trade barriers and connect to those international markets using things like the new Pacific Fibre Cable or doing what Rod Drury and these guys are doing.
Those are the bigger players. I mean, we have, Ben's a phone app developer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A friend of ours is a very successful iPhone app developer.
Yeah.
It's a very small business. It can be a one-man band, maybe two people, a designer and a coder, and they can make hundreds of thousands of dollars out of a single app that maybe takes, it might take a month to build.
Exactly. So what you're doing is joining a global market that is reasonably free, and that where the established interests don't dominate and can't exclude, despite what Microsoft and Apple and Google are trying to do.
Yeah.
They're paying tax in the States.
Yeah.
They are. Another good story. I mean, I had a go at this last week, which is how Google paid $7,000 tax on $150 million of revenue.
Yeah.
This is another one of the other reasons why I've become disillusioned with completely open free movements of capital and trade, where these enormous multinationals
go with the cheapest taxes.
They will game the system to essentially not pay tax.
Yeah.
There's an interesting, have you heard of a movie called The Corporation? Which essentially says that corporations have the same characteristics as psychopaths.
Yeah.
And that they are utterly self-centered.
Yeah.
And will do anything to perpetuate themselves.
Well, I mean, look, if Google legitimately said don't be evil, they'd be paying tax wherever they earned it and you know, helping out local communities and this sort of stuff. They just, you know, don't give it to it. Because it's like that thing you're saying about one person, you know, earning as much as 10,000 people.
Mm.
When does a corporation need to make $30 billion or whatever as a profit? What is it? Where does
or
it
have
go?
$50 billion cash in the...
Yeah,
in the sock drawer.
But is that,
which
is that
Apple where, currently have $50 billion cash on hand?
Yeah. But they've also got debt. It's really weird. But is that what you're saying? That seems to be almost a bit further than where you're going with simply saying maybe a bit more protectionist and stuff. Are you saying people shouldn't, you know, be as profligate with all this earning? And
I
this
think
sort of stuff?
Allowing people and companies to run amok means, for whatever reason, in this current, you know, social scene, that people will blow themselves up.
Mm.
It's a bit like making sure the kids have fences around the pool so they don't go and jump into it and drown.
Yep.
When you allow these monolithic, multinational, psychopathic corporations to run their businesses, usually in the interests of the managers
and their
bankers, then you end up with, destruction on a massive scale, which is what we're seeing now. Because those companies encourage people to take on enormous amounts of debt. Interestingly, the companies themselves didn't take on debt. It was the consumers this time around. And so you have, and it worked for them because...
But, encouraged by the companies, you know, marketing, and, you know, you must buy this and you need to look this way and drive this car, then, and here's the money you can have to do it. Same ad break, you know, here's your low APR loans or whatever they are.
Yeah, it's really interesting how a consumerist society, and that's what America exported, and what we think of as the way to go. And there's a whole group of people who've grown up thinking it's better to consume than to save.
Mm.
But unfortunately, you can only do that for so long within a closed world, unless we can borrow from Jupiter or Uranus or whatever. It's just not going to work because, and unless the Chinese continue to decide to essentially give up spending now to help the Americans spend, because that's what they've been doing for the last 10 years for their own reasons, and because consumers don't have power there.
Yeah.
The people who have power are the factory owners and the governments. You end up with it just can't work. Eventually, the debt gets too big.
This is interesting, though, as well, because you're saying there's a whole generation of people that have grown up thinking it's better to spend than save.
Yep.
But it's another one of the comments I've heard you make is in terms about the inequity across generations. So you've got baby boomers of three or four houses and their kids can't buy a house.
Yep.
But aren't the kids partly to blame for spending, you know, for not saving? And they probably have credit card debt and this sort of
I've
stuff.
I've got no credit card debt and there's no way I can buy a house.
Well, that's the thing. If you,
I've got
if
a house and credit card debt.
Right, I have zero debt, I can't buy a house.
My bank has a house,
I earn heaps more than the average income.
Credit card debt. Credit card debt is like petrol. It's just horrible. Avoid it. But
I walk to work and have no credit card debt and can't buy a house.
Yeah, and this is the thing.
Do your parents have houses?
Yes.
So how many?
My mother has one.
Right.
My father has one.
Yeah.
Mm. So this is an interesting point, though.
Yeah.
If you've graduated from university with a student debt and a credit card debt and you continue to spend, and then you look at the prospect of owning your own home and you realise that to do it you'd have to save, you know, five or six times your salary over that period to buy it outright. Or you could take on a huge debt, like three or four times your salary, and be a mortgage slave for decades.
Yep.
Of course you're going to say, oh, sod it, I'm just going to go and buy an iPod or, you know, going to have another cafe latte and Eggs Benedict, thank you very much. You know, and of course that's the choice you're going to make. Particularly when you're that age, where you think, oh, well, you know, no one ever dies. No one ever gets old. No one needs the money in 50 years' time. I can't think of tomorrow, let alone 50 years' time. Fair enough. That's what everyone thought when they were 22. But when you were 22 in 1987 or 1991, you look ahead and think, well, if I save a bit here and I borrow a bit here, I can actually afford a home in a couple of years' time. And I can afford to have a family because I've got enough money to pay the mortgage with one income, a reasonable income. And I can have a family in my late 20s.
Yep.
Now, your only prospect of owning a family home is to A,
inherit,
B, get really lucky and hope the market rises, and there are a few people who did that between 2002 and 2007.
Yes.
But mostly at the beginning.
Interest-only type things and that sort of stuff,
But that assumes, of course, you have a continual permanent bubble growing, which, of course, stopped 3 years ago and starting to deflate.
Yes.
Or you choose to not have children. Or you think, oh, I'll do it later. And so you have this horrible situation where, you know, these people decide at the age of 39 that now's the time that they can afford to have children.
I need someone to leave my iPod collection to.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, and you end up with this horribly skewed, grumpy, angry group of people who go, what the hell was that all about? Mm. You've got the three-bedroom house in the suburbs, Mum and Dad. Mm. Why don't you either give it to me, you know, or sell it?
But no, we worked hard for it, you know.
Exactly.
We paid off our mortgage, that's what Mum and Dad are saying.
So
they worked hard on the Ponsonby Villa that they paid $20,000 for.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's working hard and there's working hard.
So this is an interesting clash, and I've been talking about this for a while too, that this, this property boom and the debt that is having to be taken on to buy into property is pushing apart generations. And is unfair.
Yeah.
It's just horribly unfair. And it is distortionary. And it's the reason why, you know, people in New Zealand worry about where their kids are going to grow up. Because if you can't provide those high quality jobs in 10 years' time in New Zealand, they're not going to be here.
Yeah.
You know, a half of all New Zealanders in their 20s are living overseas. A third of people in their 30s in New Zealand are living overseas. A third have come back and a third never left.
Yeah.
So what that's...
never left.
I'm a real New Zealander.
A quarter of all New Zealand-born graduates live overseas.
Mm.
Yeah.
We have
a lot of tax income potential gone.
And not to mention... You know,
and a lot of educational subsidy that we stumped up and now they've headed off to.
And managerial skill. Entrepreneurial flair and all these things.
And when they do come back, they come back with big wadges of cash and boost the property market.
Well, there was that.
For the people who stayed.
Yeah. And so now people are saying, I need to go overseas to earn money to come back and afford to buy a house.
Yeah.
Again, it all comes back to this crazy property boom fed by foreign debt.
Yeah.
And so one of the reasons I'm quite strong on this business of not quite putting up the barriers, but at least trying to find some ways to slow the movements of global capital and be more self-sufficient and more balanced about our budgets and our current accounts is to make sure we don't have the same influx of foreign capital pushing up property prices any further, because it just creates so many distortions and unfairnesses.
Yeah.
So what should be the rules on foreign ownership?
So I think we shouldn't allow foreign ownership of large land assets and also new purchases of big strategic monopolistic assets.
So smelters and...
Yeah, although most of those have already gone.
Yeah.
But other assets, for example, you know, should Trade Me have been sold
in
2006? It's a major asset.
Yeah.
It earns a lot of cash. It's a major part of the economy. Those profits are now going back to Australia.
That's interesting, though. I mean, so what does that mean?
Sam Morgan be building a fibre link to the States?
Good question.
Or would Sam Morgan have built Trade Me in the first place to the size it was if he wasn't allowed to sell it to anyone?
But Trade Me is now throwing off so much cash, he could afford that optic fibre cable with 1 or 2 years of profit from it.
Right, okay.
But now that's going back to the Australians. And he's... because when you sell an asset, you're essentially bringing forward free cash flow from the future into the now.
Right, so nationalise Trade Me.
These are real questions, and there was.
Well, the thing is, on the internet, you can build a new one, right? Trade Me was a copy of eBay.
Yeah,
basically.
A particularly good one.
It was better than eBay. But what's special about Trade Me?
Yeah, and
it's got the eyeballs, right?
The community. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But like any mature business, it now dominates in a classified market. It's impossible to beat. So, trading now dominates. It's impossible to beat. So it has entrenched that.
I bet Facebook could beat it. and then we'd be even more fucked.
Yeah.
Or
Google. I mean, Google
is
now amongst the top five advertising.
Google would build something incredible. and then abandoned it about 2 years later and not have really touched it in between.
Yeah, yeah. And not actually even be thinking about New Zealand.
There's a good point there about Google's, you know, the way that in order to advertise in New Zealand on New Zealand websites, you pay Google money.
Mm. Yep.
And, you know, I mean, some of it actually comes back to the advertiser, publisher, rather.
Missionary zeal. I see myself now as a substitute for imports.
Right.
Because I'm selling advertising to New Zealand companies.
Yep.
So they don't have to spend their money on Google and send it offshore.
Yeah.
So when they give me money for ads here, that gets paid in salaries to me and the other people out there.
Yeah.
And I spend it here.
Yep.
I don't send that money off to Google
Sergey
to buy another 767.
Yeah, when you're talking about digital, you know, people doing interesting things on the internet, you know, to make money. There's an argument there to do it all in New Zealand as well, though, rather than some companies doing it and selling it offshore.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned this before about maybe, you know, zero rating traffic inside New Zealand, so there's more opportunity for people to do interesting things and interesting online stuff for New Zealanders. Or is the market not big enough?
I think we shouldn't play fair.
Right.
I think we shouldn't try and come up with something that
levels the playing field.
We need to take whatever we can get.
Right.
So if they're willing to trade with us fairly and freely, good, we'll do it. But when they want to trade fairly and freely with us, we won't.
Right.
We've got to be impure and break the rules and play with dirty tricks.
So going the other way then, if you put all that in place, what does that look like in 20 years? There's no more $2 shops because we don't get nice, cheap Chinese plastic.
Good. Nice, cheap?
Well, yeah. Cheap Chinese plastic.
I mean, what is there at the $2 shop that you need?
There's nothing. That's what I'm saying.
Nothing. Yeah.
But they're likewise, and then cars get more expensive. You know.
And that's cheap because they're leveraging off the environment.
Yes.
Every trinket you buy is fucking up the planet.
So everything's more expensive. All the imports become more expensive.
Yes. We actually consume less.
Right.
I think that's good.
Okay.
I'm actually, if I've had any sort of conversion from the blue to the red, it's actually not from blue to red, it's from blue to green.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm actually, you know, I'm now in favour of, for example, much higher taxes on petrol.
Yep.
I think we need much higher taxes on imported cars, and particularly the ones with big engines and the ones that are heavy.
Yep.
I think we need
much higher... You don't drive a Range Rover then, do you? No.
No.
Land Rover Discovery.
I cycle to and from work.
Okay.
It's much cheaper, faster, cleaner and healthier for me too.
Yeah.
We should have high taxes on wasteful, dangerous foods and goods.
Mm-hmm.
So cigarettes, drugs, if we're going to legalise them, let's tax them to the hilt. Because
we get people out of jail.
Yes.
Yeah.
That?
There's already a market there that is propping up criminal gangs.
I know you're going to go here, but yeah, that's interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, and there's a lot that can be done to bring in extra taxes, because what we realise is that if we're going to have a balanced economy, if there's one sort of thing to come out of this, and I gave a presentation to the Labour Party conference a couple of weeks ago. I was asked to come in and do my thing, and I'll do it for anyone who asks. they didn't pay.
Okay.
Some people do,
right.
Companies and conferences and that sort of thing. But this was a freebie, and I do freebies for you know, some people because I just love to talk. But also because I really wanted to say this stuff and get it out there, which is...
Well, it's the right place to say it too, because it seems to make things happen.
And some of the stuff wasn't popular, you know, get rid of working for families, interest-free student loans and, you know, run a budget surplus.
Yep.
We need to have balanced budgets, not just the national budget.
What do you say about National's tax cuts then? Wrong?
The tax cuts on the 39 to 33 cent tax cut. I can see why they did it. There's an awful lot of people who think it's unfair that the middle income people are essentially paying all the tax when those who are on lower incomes pay nothing and those on very high incomes pay nothing.
Yeah.
So the middle class revolted in the last election, and part of that revolt was to get that money back with tax cuts.
Yep.
Also, it was creating a whole lot of distortions and was one of the reasons...
But it doesn't help balance the budget, though. By cutting tax.
I haven't finished yet. So and that created all sorts of distortions because people were using the current tax system to invest in property because there was a gap between the family trust rate and the top income tax rate. Mm. What I'd actually prefer is that thresholds were lifted, so it was much fairer.
More like and Australia,
then,
perhaps.
Yep, and then we have a new higher rate of tax on people earning more than 100 or more than 200K or something.
Lots of money.
Which is like 60% or 70%.
Yeah. But the free markets would say, no, then people, you know, you're not incentivising people to go out and get a good job and earn lots of money.
No, no. Point back to our most most stable, high-growth, socially together parts of our history were where we had the highest tax rates.
Yeah.
And it's not just us, it's in America and other places.
Interesting.
Namely the country that is... The country, the 50s, yep.
Yeah.
Not that it was a great time for lots of other reasons, but economically it was a...
6 o'clock time. Closing.
Yeah. if you look at... they ask the question, which country is the best to live in?
Yeah.
Right, which one's got the highest happiness ratings?
Yeah.
Denmark.
Right. They've got massive tax on
that. Hugely high tax rates.
On the high end.
Yeah, on the high end. But good public services, so much more use of cycling, all that sort of stuff.
There's a survey, I don't know the name of it, but Denmark stands out as well because of its low difference between the highest earners and the lowest earners.
Mm.
And, I mean, the US is now 10 to 1 or something crazy like that. I don't know what the ratio is, but there's multiple reasons that have been stated that having a huge disparity between the very highest and the very lowest...
It's unhealthy.
Unhealthy because there's not enough people to buy the stuff that the highest earners are producing. Mm. And also because the point that, in fact, our mate Ryan Sproul at lunch today mentioned that what happens in a society is people always look to the top earners. Always, always, always. There's people who are visible, the Donald Trumps, everyone else. So no matter where you are below them in society, you're always looking up to that level. Mm. And so the further you are down, the more horrific it seems.
Mm.
And if those highest earners aren't quite as high, then A, you can expect to maybe get there one day, and it's also less debilitating to see that. And maybe that's the point you're making.
Frankly, what I've seen in the last 2 to 3 years from those people in the top 0.1 of the 1%, the ones who... own, I think, something like 30 to 40% of the wealth and control more than 50% of the income, is they were venal, selfish, rude, and corrupt to the deepest level, and continue to be so, and have used this crisis to enrich themselves even further.
So I'm going to try a segue here that may or may not work, because I don't know how sensitive it is, but... You retweeted a link this morning about stomach stapling.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Happy to talk about that.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Because, you know, and it was a link to the Science Media Centre, a great bunch of people who evidence-based press releases, which is unheard of. and so my question is there, stomach stapling is relatively easy, relatively non-invasive these days, and the results are incredible because, you know, you talk about people on diabetes drugs being off them in 3 months, all this sort of stuff. But it's also got that stigma around it where... Fatty, why don't you just, you know, why don't you just use your willpower and lose weight?
Shut up, you're fat.
We're both, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know that I've had a stomach.
Oh, really? Okay. I was wondering why you'd retweeted
it. Yes.
So, I mean, we could talk about that as well, but is there an equivalent to stomach stapling for the economy? Because what you're saying is, the stuff you're saying is quite hard to do, and it requires a lot of willpower and a lot of political power and stuff to do this to get us into a place where we
it's
need to be
difficult.
To get us skinny, basically.
Yeah.
So, but is there an equivalent to, you know, is there an easier way? Is there some way we can... staple the stomach of the economy.
I mean, you look at the enforced stomach staplings in the global economy, that's in Greece and in Ireland.
It's not easy.
Where the financial market simply said, you fix it or else.
Right.
And they've got a particular problem there that they're both locked into a currency, and often a currency can help you as an automatic stabiliser to fix some of these issues. Mm. But they're not, and they've chosen to stay in those currencies, so they are seeing... 20 to 30% job losses in the public sector, 15 to 20% cuts in public salaries, contractions in their economies, big losses for all sorts of people. Mm. You know,
it's more like a crash diet than a stomach stapling.
No, there isn't. I don't think
there's
there is an easy way. What the Americans are trying to do is
eat their way through.
Eat their way to freedom.
The only way out is through. Grab a spoon,
man. I mean, you're exactly right about the Americans. They believe the way to freedom is consumption and on getting bigger. And have you been to the States?
No.
I went to Vegas. I went to the States for the first time in March to a conference, a Microsoft conference. And my first visit to... I flew into LA, stayed there for three hours, and then went on to Vegas. That was my first introduction to the States.
Yeah.
I think it was the right way to do it.
Yeah. So...
it was incredible.
Two years ago, I went with my family and we hired an RV in LA.
Yeah.
And we drove across the south of the States to Lando. So yep. Right across the south and southwest through mid-America.
Go through Vegas?
We did. We actually didn't stop. We drove straight through the strip and went out the other end.
It's an amazing place. It's almost like a it's like American concentrate, like orange juice concentrate. I think
artifice.
Yeah,
except there's no orange juice in it.
No, exactly. It's all artificial. And going past the Hoover Dam and seeing it, I thought, my God, this thing is so empty.
Yeah.
Really, really empty. And when I went back to the hotel, I looked up online, it's the emptiest it's been in 50 years, Hoover Dam. And there is not a skerrick of evidence of that in Vegas. There's nothing saying save water. There's nothing saying, hey, the Hoover Dam's almost empty. We better bloody sort ourselves out. Nothing on the news. Just keep calm and carry on.
What happens outside Vegas stays outside Vegas.
Keep flushing your toilet. Keep bloody gambling.
Yeah. No, it's an amazing place. And the thing is, they have a society that is built for consumption. So all the ads say consume, consume, consume. The ads say borrow, borrow, borrow.
Yeah.
Consume, consume. They make it easy to consume. You know, there's a takeaway restaurant in every corner with a drive-through, and you don't even have to move your legs. You just push the button and the window goes down and you hand your money over and they give you back the food and you eat the food as you're driving and you suck on the Slurpee and, you know, it's all set up to consume, consume. And then what do you get? You get an insanely unhealthy, obese country. And,
I was
part of that system.
Right.
I, you know, ate too much and didn't exercise enough and got obese.
Yeah.
And it wasn't healthy for me for all sorts of reasons. So I had initial stages of diabetes, was bound to get a heart attack or a stroke within a few years.
Yeah.
This was killing me. So I decided to do something drastic and had a gastric bypass. So it's actually different from a stomach stapling. What they actually do is reroute your insides down to your
permanently.
Oh, they did the big thing, the cutting and
it's
stitching.
Yeah, it's a Roux-en-Y. It's all done laparoscopically these days, so the risks are lower.
Yeah.
And so I lost 45 kilograms.
Mm.
And I did it because I wanted to be around for a long time, and I paid for it myself to make sure, because I could afford it. I'm sure I will save the taxpayer millions of dollars because I'm not going to have my toes slowly lopped off and... all the stuff, horrible stuff that happens with diabetes. But in America, everyone is obese, particularly in that middle part. The coasts, not New York and LA, right?
Yeah.
They're all extremely thin. It's like a status symbol. How thin are you? But the rest of the country, it is, you know, you can just see the whole place is groaning under the weight of all this consumption.
Yeah.
They're dead. You can see it. We actually had to stop going to supermarkets, the regular supermarkets in America, because everything was jammed full of...
high fructose corn syrup.
High fructose corn syrup, seriously. And everything is processed and everything is convenient and everything is incredible. Because I got used to reading the labels. You'd go, oh my God, they're eating this shit.
Yeah.
So we had to go to this whole new... In fact...
What do I have to do to get some cane sugar?
No, that's right. There's a chain of restaurants in supermarkets in the States called Whole Foods, which is the only one you can actually buy stuff from.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where we were driving through the middle of America. So middle America is the sort of heart of lard country. And
also the heart of religious country.
Yes. I mean, there's all sorts of...
Clinging to their guns and their religion.
Oh. So, and we got to the point, we were driving between cities, and obviously there's towns on the way, but you couldn't stop at these places and buy food because... You
couldn't get anything decent.
Well, you couldn't really stop at the Denny's or the McDonald's or whatever because you don't know what's in the food and it's horrible.
Yeah.
And so we eventually drove for 7 hours straight to get to one of these Whole Foods places.
Like an oasis in the desert.
And it actually just occurred to me then that what I was doing what America was doing, which is trying to eat my way to freedom, which was just obscene.
Mm-hmm.
So... last August, I had a gastric bypass and lost that weight and feel fantastic. I feel great. I know I'm going to be around for my daughter to grow up and have her kids, and that's fantastic. And now I've sort of looked again at how I consume. So yeah. Now I cycle to work every day. In fact, yeah. It's faster and cheaper and healthier. It's great.
Yeah.
I don't buy stuff, so I've stopped buying coffee from cafes because they're quite expensive. You know, $4 now, $3.50.
And they're full of sugar.
Yeah, and the milk's got all the sugar in it. Yeah.
Lactose is sugar.
Yeah. So there's lots of things I realise I don't actually need, and I'm happy because of it. And there's lots of people who, if only they realised through price signals of higher taxes on sugar and fat and
so it's part of the protection,
tobacco and alcohol, would actually realise, because they're forced to realise, that I don't really need that, you know, that 99% sugar thing. Actually, I can get by with something else. Or it actually forces, you talk about forcing a society to, you know, get healthy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do it. It's just to
social engineering.
Chris, no, I'm actually so my.
It's a boogeyman of the right.
My background is economics. So my instinct is to say just put a tax on it to increase the price of it to change behavior.
Well, look at the traffic. You know, whenever it was 2 years ago, petrol was $2.50 a litre. The traffic changed. Absolutely, I drive out from out west. You know, so I'm acutely aware of. Daily fluctuations in traffic and school holidays and everything like that, and it was different.
So peak oil is another thing I've sort of worked out in the last 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
Have you worked out peak everything yet?
Well, you know, there's
we talked about that on a previous podcast.
This is the problem. With
peak gold. Do you know how much gold's been dug out of the ground?
Not nearly enough.
25 meter cube in all of history. Right, 25 meter cube.
Yeah.
Not right. So we're going to use the gold standard.
Yeah. Well, that's one way to control the growth of money supply and avoid this debt problem. If you can't produce that much more of it, what you're using is an artificial limit on your ability to consume.
Yeah.
And which is,
it is interesting because by accident you then fix a lot of other stuff because.
This limitless growth thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
You can't do that.
There's only one world.
There is only one world.
Yeah.
And it's already full.
That's the thing. Our existing capitalist system lives off limitless growth.
Mm.
And there's some interesting comments that a guy called, I think his first name's David Thiel. Anyway, he just bought a stake in Xero. He was a co-founder of PayPal.
Yep, yep.
Anyway, he's a madly keen libertarian.
Right.
Believes in seasteading. Have you heard of seasteading? This is a bit like Waterworld, where you set up your own society in international waters. So you don't
like
cats.
Sea land.
Yeah. It's like Waterworld.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He has some interesting views on technology and how...
Yeah.
A lot of those people believe in freedom for themselves. Not so much for everyone else.
Yeah, particularly if they're really rich.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he's an interesting... I haven't met him, so all I've read about is the stuff that I've read. And he sounds like a really interesting character. And he's invested a lot of money in Xero, so hey, that's good.
Yeah.
But he has this view that technology hasn't actually improved that much in the last 40, 50 years.
Right.
You know, the planes don't go that much faster.
Yep.
We still use combustion engines.
That are about as efficient as they were.
Yeah. And there's lots of things where we haven't actually improved, technology hasn't improved productivity that much. I mean, some areas, you know, some areas around IT and computers and that sort of thing seem to have improved productivity. But what he's saying is that you can't have limitless growth in consumption of resources when there are limits on some of the things and where technology isn't solving it.
Right.
So, yes, you could have limitless...
If you can become more efficient with everything.
Yeah. For example, we could all have cars and drive them wherever we want if the cars only use 1 litre per 100 kilometres. But they're still around 5 to 10, which is not that much different to what it was 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Once you take into account the extra weight of new cars and all this, air conditioning systems and all that sort of stuff, you're actually not that much more efficient.
Mm.
So what he's saying is without real improvements in technology and productivity, you can't have a limitless growth society.
Mm.
And his sort of Armageddon scenario is that eventually you'll have some sort of Lord of the Flies type conclusion where people are fighting each other for resources.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's true.
Yeah.
Unless we get post-scarcity, which is very unlikely.
Yeah. So, and this is, what you've got really is the Chinese, for example. The Chinese are acutely aware of the shortages of commodities and water, and so when people come to buy our stuff, you know, we should be aware the reason they're coming to buy it is because they can't buy it in their, or get it in their own country, and they're aware that in 20, 30 years' time it's going to be very scarce. So, you know, and we've got a lot...
On the bright side, if China buys parts of New Zealand, in 20 years they won't need to invade.
Yes.
Because it'll be, you know, just kind of part of the greater prosperity zone.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll dodge the literal bullets.
If you look at North Asian societies that have industrialised and hit up against their resource barriers, the last one to do that.
North Korea's got basically nothing, right? They've got no resources.
No. Although they were richer than South Korea in 1952 when the truce was declared. Mm. Now I'm talking about Japan in the 1920s and 30s. That you're right, chose to get hold of the
southern resource zone and so on.
Whatever was there.
Yeah.
And so it's good that the Chinese are not invading. But there's nothing to stop us from saying respectfully, as they would say to us,
right.
We'd love to trade with you, but you just can't buy our assets.
Yeah. I don't really want foreign ownership of all of New Zealand, but then it kind of delights me when Fonterra is out there, you know, buying up farms themselves and Argentina and China.
Do you know what they're doing in China?
I don't know what they're doing.
Factory farm.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
So this is like cattle on concrete?
Because they're not allowed to do it in New Zealand, so we'll go off and do it in China. And
all right, now we have to do away with that.
Yeah, no, this is representing New Zealand to the Chinese, which is building massive factory farms. We're talking thousands of cows on big concrete pads under roofs.
Full of antibiotics. Yeah. Probably eating sugar rather than grass. Lots in the form of corn, probably, and palm kernels.
This is not pastoral farming.
Yeah. So, and it will be sold under the...
Well, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So actually, I'm on the verge of writing a story about Fonterra and how it's... in danger of damaging our 100% pure reputation with a succession of things, including, calf induction, aquifer
pollution,
rape, frankly,
sucking
the stuff out of the ground and not paying for it.
Yeah, Canterbury is not meant to be green right now. It's meant to be brown right now.
Yeah, that's right. and then a whole bunch of stuff with effluent treatment and then you've got the cubicle farms, which Fonterra never really stood up and opposed. And there's a whole bunch of other issues where farmers have done crazy things for capital gains and Fonterra has turned a blind eye because it needed and wanted the production.
It's a Crayfar type thing as well.
Yeah.
And isn't that aiming kind of at the bottom of the market?
Mm.
Shouldn't we be making the best beef and the best cheese rather than the most cheese?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be better? Because then we can protect our environment, we can be pastoralists
and, artisans.
And is that not another opportunity
and get
there?
These so what you're premium saying is, products out there.
And, exactly. if we do, you know, you're saying we be a bit more protectionist, buy less, be a bit more green. It doesn't it just help brand New Zealand as well? I mean,
exactly. And reinforce what we've already got.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get a brand in a global environment.
Yes.
It costs gazillions to actually buy ads on TV.
Unless you fluke one.
Yeah, which is, you're right, we did fluke it through.
And we're already risking it. I mean, you already hear a little bit of swell about this sort of stuff around the world, about New Zealand isn't
Food
really
miles.
Really, well, also New Zealand isn't really as pure as we'd like to think. And it's already starting to...
Yeah, there's a lot of rivers you don't want to swim in now.
No, The Guardian did that story. And actually, I broke a story... 2 years ago when we discovered that Alan Crafer was allowing neglect of calves on his farms. Mm. We managed to report the story of the calves dying in those sheds.
Mm.
And 2 weeks later, he was put into receivership.
Yeah.
And then we had a debate about foreign ownership of that land, Crafer Farm. So my conversion, if you like, from free market to sustainability is through that path where I grew up on a dairy farm and it was a dairy farm where the cows ate grass.
My family's a dairy farming family in the Wairarapa and I think of it as being grass based, but I understand that almost everyone now is supplementing with palm kernel.
Yes, so when we had problems in the winter, when
it makes worse milk.
Yeah,
it raises the saturated fats, which are not good for you.
And so, when we didn't have enough feed, we used to feed them hay in silage, yeah. Which we have.
Silage, which smells glorious. I love it. I love it.
The bad stuff.
Bit of fermentation.
So you would, we'd harvest it off our own farm, yep. Store it up and use it in the winter.
I remember driving a ute.
Yeah. I mean, this is all perfect.
Age 7. My first time driving a vehicle, first time crashing a vehicle. I couldn't see over the dash.
There you go.
And that was humans cows. Working the land.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I used to help milk the cows. Mm. And, you know, we might give them a drench every 6 months to get rid of the tapeworms, but we were never injecting them every day.
Yeah.
You know, we'd never feed them stuff because we didn't have the setup for it. The model was... This is pastoral farming.
And the male calves didn't pay a price.
So, devil's advocate here. So you're saying...
We looked after them when they... You know, that was one of my jobs, was to make sure they were fed every day. So that they got onto the truck looking extremely happy.
Right.
So you're saying that I mean, I'm assuming, paraphrasing, that the dead calves at Crayfar's farm are kind of the ultimate conclusion of free marketeering and ultimate, you know, going for profit.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were still... hand feeding cows and only feeding them hay and silage, then New Zealand wouldn't be as well off as we are today. We wouldn't have the decent cars and the.
There's different kinds of well off.
What unfortunately has happened is a lot of that money went into farm valuations, and then debt was raised against it.
Okay.
And we've effectively.
So we're fat, basically.
Yeah. And what we did was sell off. Indirectly, a lot of that farmland by borrowing.
I can buy the analogy.
So the debt in the New Zealand farming sector has risen from around about 15 billion in 2000 to 48 billion now.
Right.
We're the level of debt we have now is worth 3 to 4 times total output. We're up to our gills in debt in the dairy sector.
Interesting.
And a lot of that money that was sort of pumped in there and is there now, it's been spent in the, you know, in all sorts of ways in New Zealand. People going on holiday, people have bought cars.
Mm-hmm. The number new tractors, whatever.
I get really grumpy with Porsche Cayennes.
They're disgusting cars anyway.
They look horrible. They are heavy, they're loud, they're lardy tubs of cars. And I see them all around the place.
Yeah.
We don't need Porsche Cayennes. We don't need those horrible... Nissan Mistrals either, all those four-wheel drive ones that were imported by people in South Auckland and North Auckland and wherever they could get their hands on for like $9,000 from Japan because they wouldn't cope with them anymore.
Yeah.
The last 10 years, New Zealand just larded up on cars and SUVs and stuff that probably really need.
Yeah.
But we were encouraged to buy it because it seemed cheap and because we could afford it, and because of course you want an SUV, you don't want a Corolla.
You don't want a train. What use is a train? Who needs a bicycle or a bus lane?
But no one wants to take pain. No one wants to eat less and you know, have a worse car.
You're right. Deciding to do that is difficult.
Yeah.
That's where you need leadership. That's where I think someone like as gifted as John Key or whoever can stand up and say...
Stokey dokey.
Well,
is Bill English gifted? Is he a financial saviour? Because
he's interesting. He's an interesting character. I mean, I've spent quite a
bit of time. Did he wave a magic wand on the wage growth?
But
did he wave a little spin doctor's pamphlet there on it?
Yeah. No, I've spent quite a bit of time talking to Bill English, and I've watched him give some really interesting speeches. I don't think that he or Key are doctrinaire and... Or wedded to any particular interest, and I think they're genuinely trying to improve things, and they have not become mad, you know, backers of the new right. You know, they're not Roger Douglas or Richard Preble or Ruth Richardson. They're not, and you know, no one. If they were, that he would never have done what he did this week with The Hobbit. He would have said, "Oh, it's a free market. We'll make it up in the end, and I want a level playing field, and they'll come back to us when things are right, and the currency's up, it could be down. You know, we've got automatic stabilizers. the market's just decided, and fine."
It did actually reek it reeked of the act of a little bit of a.
a little bit of terror in there. A bit terrified about what the consequence was, perhaps.
Well, we should be.
Yeah. So I mean, we should be.
We should fight tooth and nail.
Yeah.
For these jobs. You know, last Christmas I took my daughter to see Avatar because she's a geeky sort of digital animating game player. She's not a girly girl. She she likes watching action flicks and playing shoot 'em up games.
Yep.
She should learn to make games.
She does. You know, right. She does bits and pieces. And
she should learn to make them for herself, not for a big company.
Yes, I'm sure she'd love to do that too. Anyway, so I took her to Avatar because it's a great movie and it's not a chick flick, and my wife only likes to go to chick flicks. And so if I can find someone else to go with to see an action flick, I will.
Good.
So she wanted to go, so we went to see Avatar, and it blew her away, and it was fantastic. And anyway, and of course, I like to sit and watch the credits roll, so I can see the names of the people who made this and start to imagine, what are they like? Who are they? And they've got these amazing names. You know?
I used to count them. When I was young, I'd count them, and like the more names there were, the better the movie probably had been.
Yes. How many units?
So there we are, sitting in our seats, watching the credits roll on Avatar with my daughter.
And there goes Weta.
Of course, and all those names. And
I had no idea.
And all those places.
I didn't know they were working on that.
Yeah, and all these names and all these places.
Yeah.
And I can point to my daughter, who's a potential digital animator, saying, the coolest jobs and the things that you love are in Wellington. And you could make a great living, do really fun things with great people. And
pay New Zealand taxes.
Yeah, exactly. And you could do it in Wellington. You don't have to go to LA. You don't have to... you could do that. And so when John Key, does that stuff, fights tooth and nail, breaks the rules, does the impure thing, I say, good.
Well, so I mean, does that mean that everything is actually going naturally towards a bit more of a protectionist thing?
It's every,
do we need more of these crises?
It's every country for themselves and every man for themselves. And you fight to protect your family and your country and make sure that if you really care about it.
Yeah.
And I've been away long enough and come back to know that I do. I want my grandkids to grow up here. So I will talk about this stuff and write about it and say, we should change this and we should do this because if we don't, our kids will leave and they'll go and they won't come back. And
this is what you called being openly nationalistic in your Herald article.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So that means doing whatever it takes to keep those jobs here, keep that revenue here, stop the capital from leaving, and that means
and live the pain of that as well.
Yeah,
that means cheap imports.
Yeah. So I've been saying this for a while. New Zealand needs to have lower standards of living, and we have to ask ourselves what that means.
Yeah,
that means.
And this is where you were.
It means
saying,
we don't want fries with that.
Yes.
It means. We can't afford a new car.
I suggest less meat. Less meat.
You're a vegetarian.
You don't need to eat meat with every meal.
that's where high prices have actually forced us to do this. Although, unfortunately, what it's done is displace us down to chicken and pork from lamb and beef. But, do those things. Put up taxes on all these things.
Yeah.
Because if we don't run budget surpluses... And that's the best way to improve your national savings rate, by the way, rather than compulsory taxation, compulsory savings or whatever. The best way to do it is actually run budget surpluses, not to be borrowing $250 million a week
so
like we are.
So, compulsory savings, maybe not a good thing. How do we stop New Zealanders from thinking that property is the be-all and end-all when it comes to investment?
Impose a capital gains tax.
Right.
Impose a land
tax. Why is it so unpalatable?
It is for those people who own property and have made big property capital.
And they, unfortunately, are the grey hairs who are in power, isn't
it? Yes, both central and local governments.
Yeah.
When I say grey hairs, they're probably...
I said grey hairs, so you don't need to own that.
Right, because I have grey hairs too. But
graying at
the temples, we're talking, who runs your society? It's your 40, 50 and 60-year-olds, mostly the 40 and 50-year-olds. Now, those are the people who just... made out like bandits during the property boom and don't want to give it up.
Yeah.
And
well, they won't. It's only a little bit of capital gains on future, which is going to be a long time before things start.
Exactly. But when you've built your whole society on sucking money out of the ATM, why would you stop the magic dial in the OTM continuing to increase.
Mm.
And that's what capital gains tax. It's not the capital gains tax itself. It's the prospect of not having the capital gains, which means you can't keep consuming as you were.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
What that essentially says is that New Zealanders have to lower their standards of living. So I haven't written that column.
Find other ways to make money.
Yeah, so I need to write a column that says, here's how we could reduce our standard of living and actually enjoy life more.
Yeah.
But by, you know, means things like we don't go on holiday overseas.
How about 30-hour weeks?
Well, you know, there's an argument to say that, and this is not just our society, but other societies as well, they've concentrated work onto some people, paid them higher wages.
Mm.
They work 10, 12, 14-hour days, and then there are people who are unemployed. So why not just have one person working 7 hours and the other person working
that's
six
kind
hours.
Of what they've done in France, right?
Yeah. So why not do that instead? Yeah. And no, fair enough. Mm. Let's think about doing stuff like that. But that means a lower income. And when you say, as you say, when you say to people, it's time to have a lower income, and that means you can't afford, you know, to send the kids to drama practice, or you can't afford to go on that beach holiday that weekend, or we can't go.
But you can go camping in the Coromandel, and you can, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, you can. So, for example, 2 weekends ago, we're on a bit of an economy drive, right? So we're trying to repay our debt. I actually think people should repay debt.
I've got none, but I also have no house.
There you go. You're in a good position.
No, I want a house.
What you need,
and no debt.
So what you need is house prices to come down.
I made a
Facebook group that says bring house prices down.
Right. I made a mistake. I started a business instead of buying a house.
You see, that's investing.
And then the business, well, it would have been investing if the business had been successful.
Oh, right.
But I mean, it just kind of ticked along for 5 or 6 years, and then I was like, well, this isn't really working, and I got out of it. But, you know, I got out of it with kind of less than I went in. I mean, a great experience, and know how to run a business probably better than I did then now, but...
Yeah.
Mm. Well, that's investing. And in a way, that's what I've chosen to do as well. I left a big, high-paying corporate job that was slaving away for estranged shelters I didn't know to come and work for a business where I'm actually creating some value for me, but also I'm helping to employ people.
I was surprised by how many people you have.
And we're actually looking to employ one more. And we aim to probably have 2 or 3 more by the end of next year. Our aim is to employ, you know, analysts and journalists on living wages in Auckland. So that we can report on these financial issues and do the stuff in the new world online.
I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, there are things that are happening in that front. I mean, NBR is in the same sort of vein, aren't they? There are small people trying to employ local people.
Yep.
Yeah,
unfortunately for the NBR and all the print publishers, they've got a dying model.
And that paywall.
So, and it's extremely hard to transition a business from assets which are high cost, fixed, to with high revenue, to one with no assets but low revenue.
So
you actually can't do it. You actually have to shut down that business and start up a new business somewhere else.
And build New Zealand's best top podcast.
There you go. Happy to help you do it for free.
Do you have any advice on how to build an empire? Now, I mean, granted that you seem to actually know things, and we are just a pair of buffoons. I mean, I think Ben is drunk, and I haven't slept for 30 hours.
I only had 2 beers at lunch.
Right, and I had, you know, a 5-minute power nap in the morning. But...
Right. So there'll be no more beers.
Yes. I drank kiwi beer. I drank Epic Lager, so I think that's all right, isn't it?
No. We need to
he had to buy the hops.
Stop consuming.
Right.
We need to stop consuming.
We can grow those hops here. Nelson is one of the best places in the world to grow hops.
What you could have done.
And we can export hops.
Have your relaxing time in the middle of the day in the sun.
With a packed lunch.
With a packed lunch and a glass of water.
Right.
Home-baked bread. And what do you come from your own well?
I don't know if I can handle this austerity.
It's much better. You feel
you need
much
to catch your white rainwater from your roof. Drink that.
You feel much better at the end of the day.
And you're probably right, actually.
And it means that that company, that who owns
Epic,
that company?
Luke Nicholas, Epic Beer. Oh, no, I think he's actually with them. He's in partly owned with some other larger brewers. So.
Yep. What he needs to do is shut down his business.
He makes great beer, though.
He needs to make that great beer and sell it overseas.
He is.
He's really great.
Yeah, he's exporting.
Yeah, he's exporting.
Good.
Okay.
Slowly, slow growth, though.
Yeah. But
sustainable growth.
He needs to export most of that beer overseas.
Right.
What you do with not spending that money on the Epic beer is use that money to build a business that exports overseas.
Right.
So that we can have a current account deficit, have a current account surplus.
Okay.
And we need to create incentives for you to do that by putting a huge tax on that beer.
Right.
And by encouraging you to build an export business and him to build an export business.
A tax on that beer if it's sold in New Zealand?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Right, right. So a less incentive for me to go out to lunch and have beer.
Yep.
And instead, okay, all right.
But beer's good. Beer is civilization. Beer is one of the starts of it all. Beer and bread. Cultivation, that's where our civilization came from.
Stop having fun.
What's the point if we don't have fun? What's the point?
You can have fun other ways.
Yeah.
So I used to think
the
only way you could have fun was to eat something nice and you know, have a beer and all that stuff and jump in the car and drive home. I didn't ring the driver or anything, but but now I don't have a beer and I don't eat nasty things and I cycle home and I have a ball.
Yeah.
Are you an extremist? Have you swung from one side all the way to the other?
I don't think so.
The free market god, but you've...
Yeah. I was never completely, free market, so I wouldn't say, away with all taxes, and there are some people who say that. Mm. I actually wanted increased taxes on some things.
Now, something, maybe you can explain it to me. People who say that private businesses are always going to be more efficient than than government-run or, that kind of institution, but... There are inefficiencies built into private enterprise in the form of profit. Profit is an inefficiency, isn't it?
Well, you can.
I mean, that's scooping off the cream.
Yeah, you can use profit to reinvest,
but in the quarterly target scenario,
what they did was they scooped the profit off and spent it. Yeah. Usually on the Maserati, instead of reinvesting it in the business or.
Well, yeah, because, in terms of share market reporting, this sort of stuff, the drive is to report the profit over and over again, there's no incentive to long-term investment.
That's a structural problem with our system of allocating savings and investment, is that it goes through a set of capital markets, is allocated by fund managers, who themselves are based on quarterly reporting cycles, and it's the same with them. In fact, there's some people that argue that... stock markets and companies should stop reporting quarterly and report annually at the very least.
Yeah, with a strategy backing to it as well.
Creates better long-term value without having that nutty quarterly focus.
Yeah, because, with the quarterly focus, this is why we have to have the...
extreme short...
And the fiber way we have the broadband network, because no company's going to spend that money over the long term to put new fiber in the ground. They have to get the government in to help them out.
Yeah, well, that's one argument to say government should do the long-term investing because they have a longer-term investment horizon and are better able to essentially reallocate capital over very long time frames
and
spread the cost amongst for those sorts of public goods across a wider group of people. Mm. But that doesn't necessarily mean to say that everything should be done by the government, because I've been involved in government operations and seen how...
Oh, no, it definitely shouldn't, because, the kind of the consensus thinking, the design by committee, the boring thinkers, I think you need creative thinkers and you need small groups and you need, I think you need a mix, you need all that, you need a nice spice.
You're listening to Discourse.
And I think we'd like to say once again thank you to Bernard Hickey, who was incredibly generous with his time.
Very much so. So head up interest.co.nz and add to his debate. And you'll love it.
Yep, love it. Look forward to the next episode of the Discourse Weekly Show.
And the next special edition.
Thank you. I love you. Goodbye.
You're listening to The Weekly Show with course.
All right, we're using that one.